Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. We are in our third day of election coverage here at 538. We have not gotten any new projections so far today. However, we have had more ballot counts come in from places like Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. It looks like Biden is still ahead in Nevada and Arizona, and Biden is very much closing in on President Trump's lead in Pennsylvania and Georgia. At this moment, the Georgia race is on a knife's edge. In Pennsylvania, it looks like Biden is going to overtake the president there at some point, but those ballots are not in yet, and they have been trickling in throughout the day. They expect full results, or full-ish results, by tomorrow. There is some chance that by the time you're listening to this, the race has been called, but we wanted to hop on here in any case just to share some updates before it got too late. So here with me to do that is Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. Hey, Nate.
Hey, Galen.
Back at the ABC studios, I see they really got you working there.
I was on GMA this morning. I was on their 10 a.m. show. It's weird. I feel like a TV like person for the one day of my life.
It's like you're promoting a movie or something.
Yeah. And they want you up early and out and in here late, right? And not like, oh, take your time. They're like, yeah, get in here now, you know?
American needs your analysis, Nate.
Yeah.
Also here with us is senior politics writer Claire Malone. Hey, Claire.
Hi, Galen.
And senior politics writer Perry Bacon Jr. Hey, Perry.
Hi, Galen.
All right, Nate, kick us off. The last time we talked was Wednesday night, and we had said that Michigan had flipped for Biden. That was the projection. Biden was the apparent winner in Wisconsin and in Nebraska second. So those were the changes from 2016. We've got more ballots in today. What have they told us about the state of the race in the five unprojected states?
Well, the top line is that we can't say what the top line is because A, we don't want to make a mistake. B, superstition. C, there's probably some network standard that we violated. So we have to dance around the fact that one candidate is much more likely than the other to win, mostly because of Pennsylvania, where one of the two people running for president, the former vice president, Joe Biden, is winning very large majorities of votes that are being counted because they are votes that were cast by mail. And in Pennsylvania, that was a very, very Democratic vote. Even in red counties, it was often a Democratic vote. And then very, very blue in purple and blue counties in Pennsylvania. And the math is that there are enough votes outstanding in Pennsylvania that unless there's something that we really don't understand, that Joe Biden is likely to overtake Donald Trump in Pennsylvania. If that were to happen, then Joe Biden would then have 270 plus electoral votes in states that I think are either have been called by other networks or I think are safe to call, or actually things that both have been called by other networks and I think are safe to call, right? Meaning not Arizona, not Nevada, because it hasn't been called by anyone yet, but like that would put Biden over 270 Pennsylvania, which is a big problem for Trump.
That seems pretty positive news for Biden in Pennsylvania. In Nevada, you said earlier today on our live blog that, you know, we're not a decision desk here, but that if it were up to you, you would have called that for Biden. Do you still feel that way?
Obviously. I mean, I think people are being a little bit meek not to call Nevada because like it's mostly mail votes in Clark County. You know, first of all, Biden is ahead. And so if Kennedy's ahead, you're like, you have to ask this decision desk. I don't work on a decision desk, never have, right? But like the general principle is like, is there a plausible scenario where the candidate who is behind catches up? Doesn't have to be likely, just plausible, right? To me, it's not plausible that like Trump, who's already losing these mail ballots in Clark County, 90% of them are in Clark County, there's not enough vote from the rurals. So it seems like Joe Biden's lead's likely to expand there. I understand the caution, but like, you know, if John Ralston says that there's no path, then, you know, I don't think there's a path.
Right. And we should mention that there's perhaps a little bit of politics going on here in the sense that Fox News and the AP have already called Arizona for Biden. So if they called Nevada, that would bring Biden to 270. Yeah, and then both the AP and Fox News would basically be projecting Biden as the next president of the United States.
And that's a whole other psychodrama that I think is pretty fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of reporting going around about how the president is livid with Rupert Murdoch, who obviously owns Fox News. Obviously, the Fox News decision desk is independent, and there's some pretty apparent animosity between some of the hosts in the decision desk, some of the opinion hosts in the decision desk. So I'm sure there's a lot of tense conversations at that network today.
Perry, one thing we've also been watching throughout this election is who would take control of the Senate. And things have not looked particularly good for Democrats so far. We saw that Susan Collins won in Maine. We saw Joni Ernst won in Iowa. The Republicans won in Kansas and Montana. And so far, the two pickups for Democrats have been seemingly Arizona and also Colorado, while losing Doug Jones' seat in Alabama. So it looks like 48-50 is where we are so far. And then there's those two Senate races in Georgia. So what's going on there?
So, you know, the first one already went to a runoff were Kelly Loeffler's seat. So she made it to the, she finished in the top two along with Raphael Warnock. So they're going to a runoff on January 5th. So we're watching right now, though, is David Perdue running against John Ossoff. Perdue's the Republican, Ossoff the Democrat. It looks like, you know, Georgia is so close. Biden and Trump are basically almost, Trump has a very, very small lead. We're getting more ballots from the Atlanta area. And it looks like Perdue, who had been above 50, looks like he is probably likely to finish below 50% of the vote right now. And that would mean that would go to a runoff too between Ossoff and Perdue. So at least right now, more ballots are coming in. So maybe Perdue gets over 50, but it looks like we're headed toward Georgia, two Senate races, January 5th, to decide control of the Senate, in which Democrats would have to win both of them. Tall order, but, you know, Georgia looks like the blue wave has hit Georgia. Georgia is changing demographically, and it looks like that is a state that the Democrats are competitive in right now. Biden very much could win Georgia.
Do you know anything about what the electorate looks like in a runoff environment?
So the conventional view would be that you're gonna get the high propensity voters are gonna turn out. That's maybe gonna be a more upper income, whiter electorate. So there was a runoff after the 2008 election, and the Republicans won pretty easily that one. So my assumption, but again, Georgia is changing politically in a way where I think my assumptions, I want to be careful about assuming too much right now.
All right. Claire, what have you been watching throughout the day? I know we've gotten a lot of new results in, and things have changed a lot from where things were when the narrative started forming on the night of November 3rd.
I'm not even trying to sound cute. I don't actually remember what this morning's state of play was. It was basically that we were going to get unfolding vote counts in Georgia. Like, I think at the beginning of the day, we thought we were going to have a Georgia result by the end of the day. Basically, this has just been going pretty slow. The 538 staff all got very excited for a 5:15 p.m. Pennsylvania Secretary of State news conference, which ended up being her not really saying anything. I guess, understandably, she's out there trying to say, listen, public, we are counting the votes. We're being as careful as we can. But I think a lot of people are champing at the bit to see Pennsylvania be called or to get a firmer idea of vote counts. But I think obviously it's looking pretty good for Biden. So this day has been a little bit of like a lull before I think probably a big wave of stuff starting maybe tonight at around 9 or so, if I'm not getting out ahead of myself.
The reason it's a little hard to game out is because Biden is like 80,000 votes behind Trump now, and it's possible that kind of in like one fell swoop, Philadelphia could overachieve that margin, right, or make it very close. So in theory, at any moment, although again, I'm making the simplistic assumption that like if Biden overtakes from Pennsylvania, then you'll then have pressure to make a call, which may not be true. But like, I mean, look, if Pennsylvania weren't the decisive state, I think it would have been called already.
Wait, unpack that. What do you mean?
It's pretty obvious who's going to win Pennsylvania.
Fox doesn't want to call Arizona, and
but you don't want to call. You don't want to call a state in an election that one candidate is going to say it's fraudulent or whatever when that candidate is still ahead in that state's vote count. So I think people are going to wait until Joe Biden is ahead, and then state the obvious that Biden will most likely keep accumulating ballots.
We should say, I mean, sorry, this is, you know, do you ever have those days, listeners, where you're like, what did I do all day? Now it's kicking in what I did all day, which was, I mean, the reason why I think networks are being so conservative and why we're, you know, people are, journalists are being so conservative about this is because the moment a state gets called for Biden, Trump has spent the day tweeting out, stop the votes. These, you know, they're not letting us observe close the ballot counting closely enough. This is fraudulent. They've been touting these kind of, frankly, like from what I can tell, pretty weak sauce, like wins to get closer to the ballot counting, like physically closer to the ballot counting, things that aren't really going to change anything. But there's been a lot of just kind of PR from the Trump campaign apparatus today about voter fraud. There was a very odd press conference that the Trump campaign held in Nevada for like 3 minutes where they had a bunch of people come up to a podium. They didn't identify themselves and they kind of said, something's funny, and then they left without taking questions. So it's just been kind of an odd day, but it doesn't take a genius to understand what the president's strategy is to lay a base. And you know, it's, again, we don't have any evidence that there's any credence to those claims.
I want to keep talking about where we are right now in terms of when the race could get called. But first...
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
As Claire was mentioning, President Trump has been laying the groundwork to make lots of unfounded claims about fraud. Obviously, he's been trying to lay that groundwork for the past several days, weeks, and even months. In many ways, everything that has played out so far over the past 3 days, he has telegraphed well in advance, and we were all pretty well prepared for. I mean, maybe given that, and now that we're here, how is Trump's team behaving? How are Republicans responding? How are Democrats responding? You know, how far is he getting with these bad faith attempts to basically discredit the vote?
I don't think he's getting very far. I mean, you have things on the margin, right? There are protesters in, or there were in Michigan, there were in Maricopa County, right? But it doesn't seem like the process of vote counting has been interrupted anywhere yet. There have been attempts to slow things down in Pennsylvania. It seems like that judges are not really having much tolerance for it. You know, I think, you know, one thing that's, by the way, interesting about this election is, like, if you're a congressional Republican, you're probably kind of okay with this. You kept your majority in the Senate, probably, although we will have those runoffs, so that's very premature. But, like, you at least to bear the expectations in the Senate will probably keep your majority. You gain seats in the House, right? And you're now kind of rid of this Trump problem. So if you're anyone who's not named Donald Trump, then this election doesn't seem so bad for the future of the GOP. In fact, you might argue it's one of the better case scenarios for the GOP. You no longer have this albatross of Trump, and yet you have a foothold to regain control of Congress in 2022. Most of your incumbents kept their seats, a couple lost. Martha McSally, sorry, you lost twice now, but, you know, everyone else kept their seat. Sorry, Cory Gardner, not you, but everyone else. So you have no incentive to, like, want to cast doubt on the election results because you did pretty well in Congress.
Perry, how are you processing how this, you know, bad faith attempt to discredit the vote has gone so far?
Is like, I think Nate said the important thing, which is that what I was watching for would be, I knew Trump would do this. I was curious, would other Republicans reinforce it? And so far, you know, Trump's relatives are, a few people on Fox News are, Newt Gingrich and Rudy Giuliani are, but the elected Republicans are not really going there so far. The other thing interesting going on is Biden and his staff are being very confident about saying, we think we will win, which reinforces what the media thinks about the race, but also they are saying we want to count every vote and so on. But they are projecting a level of confidence that's probably useful to watch as well. And I think gives you an indication of probably where they view things as being headed.
Yeah, you know, that whole idea of Republican elected officials kind of be like not sticking their neck out for Trump. You even saw that in the very early hours of Wednesday when Trump came out and made his first statement and made his first statement that basically said, I won. And then Mike Pence got up and spoke for maybe 30 seconds, but in those 30 seconds said, I don't remember his exact words, but it was basically like, we're waiting to see all the votes counted. It was something very kind of like normal and, you know, what a regular elected official would say as kind of a blah space filler. And then Mitch McConnell, again, has sort of been not sounding the Trumpy train. And, you know, Donald Trump Jr., I think, was on TV or tweeting, I don't remember which, early this evening, saying, you know, all these 2024 candidates, we see you, you know, we see you not defending Donald Trump. So it is kind of this interesting, I was talking with Chad Matlin, who was sort of my editor, who was saying, it's interesting that in some ways, if Trump does lose, GOP voters will have repudiated him, but some of these other candidates down ballot, you know, people are okay with them and are okay with sort of more, you know, Trumpism through different people, but maybe Trump perhaps like went too far with his COVID response. And then it puts you in a different frame of mind of, you know, in the very, very big hypothetical of if COVID had never happened, would Trump have had a bit better chance of really making this a much, much, much closer election or winning the election? I mean, that's where you start to get into these interesting scenarios. And we're going to spend a lot of time piecing together what happened here with the presidential and the down ballot races. But those are kind of like the initial swirling thoughts.
Yeah, I think we're going to be having these conversations for a long time as we get more data in, of course, and can piece together, you know, which types of voters decided which parts of the country for whom. Do we all agree with kind of Nate's takeaway here that the more mainstream or just non-Trump GOP is also a winner in this election? You know, so it may very well end up being that Biden is the top line winner. We're not saying that yet, but that's where the data is pointing at this point. But is the rest of the GOP also a winner here, or is that too generous?
They're not winners on some level. I mean, you know, this question of, let's say Biden wins, and he wins by a popular vote margin of what Nate has said of like maybe 7 million. But we've got all these kind of Republicans taking House seats. Let's say they hold the Senate. And, you know, they continue to be like a relatively thriving party. Is America getting more liberal? Is America getting more conservative? There's a little bit of like a who knows kind of thing going on here. I don't remember your original question, Galen, but
I think that sums it up. Who knows? I think people were prepared for, you know, maybe a couple different takeaways from this. Like, Trump repudiated would have been, you know, where the average of polls were pointing. If Trump had won re-election, I think it would have been very much clear that, no, he understands and is attuned to a politics in this country or something that we didn't necessarily expect, even though he probably would have lost the popular vote in that case anyway. But this scenario, this outcome is a quite confusing one to try to unpack. And of course, we don't have all the data yet to do it.
Right. It's almost like people are potentially sick of Trump, but not sick of some of the ideas that he put out there, right? The outsiderism, the bluntness, the whatever, being against political correctness, being, you know, whatever it is, maybe there's still a lot of attraction in those ideas for people.
I mean, it could also be that, like, Biden is seen as more moderate, right? Like, we're okay with Biden, but, you know, the Nancy Pelosi and Bernie Sanders and AOC, that's a Democratic Congress, right? And so we're going to split our ticket in that respect. I mean, there is I think the conventional wisdom, in part because some congressional Democrats are kind of saying this, is that, oh, the party moved too far left. Joe Biden, you know, defund the police and the Green New Deal and whatnot, right? And Joe Biden was insulated against that either because it's Joe Biden or because people just wanted Trump out of office, but we weren't. So you're going to see a lot of debates within the Democratic Party about, has the party moved too far left? There'll be a lot about that. You're going to see like a lot of, at some point, progressive frustration, I think, right? Because you'll have a liberal, although diminished, probably minority or majority in the House that can't really get very much through the Senate, and we'll maybe kind of be at loggerheads with Biden about, like, hey, if you can't do anything in the House, then don't create problems for me. So you're going to have, you know, an enthusiastic, I don't know, it's kind of going to be interesting to see how it plays out. It'll be interesting to see if Pelosi keeps her speakership, which I think is not guaranteed, although likely.
I mean, I'm just really interested in I don't remember ever having two runoffs in the same state. Like, we're going to basically have a 2-month campaign where I assume even with COVID, every national reporter will be besieged. The seat will be down there talking in Atlanta. I feel bad for the people who live in Savannah. The number of ads they're going to receive per hour is going to be very intense. You also have Kelly Loeffler, who's a really interesting candidate who was sort of picked to be a moderate Republican, has swung way to the right to win that or get in the primary and beat the other Republican. I assume she's going to sort of try to move back the middle. That might be hard. She's running against Raphael Warnock, who's this pastor who has a great personal story but has never really run for office before. So I'm curious how that goes. John Ossoff, of course, did run but didn't win. Like, Perdue and Loeffler are not, I would argue, particularly great candidates, but Ossoff and Warnock are not very experienced candidates either. And you also just have this question of, when you have two races, do the candidates sort of run together, or do they kind of like run their own separate strategies? Do the voters sort of decide, I'm going to vote for one Republican and one Democrat to balance it out? I just think it's a lot of potential interesting things that are there if we end up with this. I'm kind of rooting for this sort of interesting Senate race to happen just because it'd be fascinating in a certain way. And also the changing way of Georgia, where, you know, Obama lost Georgia by 8 in 2012. So Georgia is one state that has moved a lot politically.
Yeah. And I mean, it does look like that will end up happening. So maybe also whatever happens in that race will do a lot of the narrative shaping too. But anyway, it is getting late, and Claire, I think we have a promise to fulfill to our listeners.
It's Galen's birthday.
So the background on this is that I think it was late at night on Twitter, not even that late at night. I said something like, my birthday is 2 days after Election Day, I'll be turning 65. And Claire's response was, are we getting drunk or very drunk? And my response was, I'll put it like this. If we're still doing daily podcasts by then, we're doing shots on air. So,
nice.
Claire, this is mostly for people who are watching on YouTube, but if you're listening to this, God bless.
Like and subscribe our YouTube page.
Claire, what are you going to be drinking?
I have a little bit of Slivovitz Plum Brandy, which I highly recommend if you can find it in your area. It drinks clean. What are you drinking, Galen?
I've got some tequila right here. I'm actually going to pour it as we speak, just to make sure no one doubts at all that I've put water in a cup to fake. Oh, that was a big pour. And actually, Tony, can you join us for a second? I know that I think you've got a shot too.
Tony. Yeah.
Here's Tony.
Hello.
What are you drinking, Tony?
I have some Rakia vodka.
Nice.
Right here. Also a big pour.
Very nice. And I should say, Nate is working, and Perry parent of a young child, and so will not be doing shots at 6:45.
I would have, but I didn't know it was actually happening. But happy birthday, Galen.
I have a young child, too. I don't know what that says about me as a dad.
Oh, wait. Go get a shot, then.
Go get a shot, Perry.
No.
I'm not, okay, you're right. I'm not going to do it. You called me on it.
It's a much better role model.
Okay, I've been called out. I get it. Yeah,
Well, okay, to toast to Galen, Galen's turning 30, you guys, which I think is a good year. Oh, I actually turned 30 the day before or the day after Trump was inaugurated. So I know what it feels like to have your 30th birthday overshadowed by political events. But you've been doing a wonderful job on podcasts.
Yes.
You're a wonderful person, a lively mind, and a good heart. So happy birthday, Galen. We love you.
Happy birthday, Galen. Oh. I have like a little
happy birthday.
Water. That's so pathetic. Yeah. I'm not going to toast with a Dasani. Sorry.
That was so touching. Thank you so much for saying that, Claire.
Of
that
course.
That means a lot.
Sláinte.
Anyway.
Happy birthday.
Cheers, folks.
Sláinte.
Oh, actually, that was okay. That wasn't as
well.
It's good tequila. I just poured more than I intended.
Actually, it kind of woke me up, to be honest.
Now editing this podcast, at least one shot in. That was also, I think, that must be a 538 Politics podcast first. We've been doing this now for 5 years, and first time we've done shots on air. So there you go. Y'all just witnessed history. And also, another perhaps podcast first, those of you all who have tuned in to YouTube now get to meet Tony Chow for the first time. And also, those of you listening to the podcast have heard him.
No, Tony's
heard
the him best.
Before. So I guess it's Tony is the best. God bless Tony. A rock throughout all of this. But anyway, thanks to everyone. Thank you, Nate. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Perry. And thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Galen.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
And I should also say that if we get results in late tonight, we'll probably be podcasting about it tomorrow morning. So don't obsessively refresh your feed at 1 o'clock.
I know. What's the cutoff? What's the cutoff?
Well, I mean, look, I may well be drunk. So if we're fine with like me at the helm several drinks in,
who's the emergency podcast host, Claire?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Tony.
We'll see what happens. Anyway, we'll leave it there. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the virtual control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.